listening to the Fab Intro Show.
Good afternoon, this is Anthony LoFaso, and you're listening to the Fab Intro Show on the Fab Intro channel. Fab Intro, that you can hear about every kind of person, every kind of organization, every kind of cause, causes that are good for humanity, good for people. I'm here today with the producer and director of the Fab Intro Show, my partner on the radio for many, many years. I don't want to say too many, but many, many years, Bill Russo. Good afternoon, Bill, and how are you doing?
Good afternoon, Anthony, and thank you for that introduction. Yes, the Fab Intro Show is here for you, ladies and gentlemen. We bring great broadcasting to you, again, about organizations, people, individuals that would be of value to you. Great listening here on the Fab Intro Show. Anthony, tell us about what we have in store today.
Well, today we have a special treat. We have a multifaceted, multi-talented individual who happens to be related to you. Apparently, the apples don't fall far from the tree. We have your cousin, Michael Russo, who has so many different capabilities and has adapted in so many places with so many different kinds of activities that we're going to let him talk about it on his own. First of all, he's involved in flying, which is a pet hobby of mine, and my family is deeply involved in it from the air traffic control side. And he's also involved in construction, and he's involved in filmmaking and a myriad of things that we're going to talk about this afternoon.
That's correct, Anthony. And you're right about being related. You know, I was on one side of the family tree, and he was on the other side. And the tree was so big, you can't see through the leaves, through all the children and people, that you can't see the other person and who they are and how the branches all meet into one place, the Russo family, which has origins in Italy in a town called Montoro.
Yes, and the name Russo is one of the most common names in Italy, in the Italian peninsula, and even in Sicily.
As a matter of fact, it is the most Italian-American common name. Russo tops the list, followed by Bruno and Marino.
Marino, yes, is a very common name. I didn't know that Bruno was a common name.
Yes, it is.
And are you talking about among Italian-Americans or among
Italian-Americans?
Yes, that may be the case. And my name isn't so common, except in my town where every third family is named LoFaso.
Well, most never leave, except for your answer.
Yeah, we're not going back, by the way.
Well, America is the place for people to come to when they need to find work, to make a new life, raise their children and family, and to be comfortable and be successful. And we have a number of successful families that we will be interviewing and talk about their origins. And I'm very happy to introduce everyone to Michael Russo. Michael, welcome to the Fab Intro Show.
Oh, thank you, Bill. How are you doing? Good afternoon.
We're doing fine. Anthony has a few questions.
Oh. Yes. Well, let's talk about flying.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking before the show, Mike and I, and we were discussing how flying has changed in the last 20 or 25 years. And currently, there is a great shortage of pilots and a great shortage of air traffic controllers, which you may have seen on the news in recent days. And Mike fills that gap a little bit in that he has qualified now with what we call ATP, which is an airline transport pilot. And we understand, Mike, that you did it in the simulator.
Yes, I got my ATP rating in the simulator when I got my type rating for the Learjet. I started all of this when I was 16 years old flying. I had my mother actually fly me to drive me to the airport because I didn't have a driver's license to get there. So she had to drive me for my flight test.
Yeah, so you had a pilot's license before you had a driver's license.
That's correct.
That's correct. And where did you train, and what kind of equipment did you train on initially?
I was flying a Piper Tomahawk at the time, which was a two-seater out of a company that's no longer in existence called Flightways on Route 109 at Republic Airport.
Yes, I think, did that come out of Zons Airport?
No, it was Republic Airport.
A Republic, yeah. I trained at both Zons and Republic back in the late 60s.
Yeah.
And flying out of Zons was a little tricky. You might appreciate this. Zons was a 1 in 19 runway.
Right, okay.
And Republic was off by one, I think it was right, 18 and 36. And so sometimes when the wind had changed, you might find yourself taking off right into an oncoming aircraft. Yeah, that happened to me more than once.
Luckily, Zanz was closed by the time I did my training.
Yeah. Well, you know, next to prisons, next to city prisons, small airports are the next bugaboo for all communities.
Exactly.
But so you started off flying the Tomahawk.
Right.
And you graduated over time in different types of
aircraft. Right. I became a Lear captain, and after that I became an Embraer 145 airliner captain. Worked for a company, a family company that does private charter for wealthy customers.
Yes, yeah, well, mostly private charter.
Right.
The figures on that are really pretty high.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy.
What do you make now of the current situation where there's this dramatic shortage, and the claim from the FAA is that while they have recruited a large number of people, most of them fail. They flop out of the air traffic control, of course.
Yeah, well,
they can't maintain it.
Well, Anthony, I was going to explain that to you. It's rare that I happen to be of the generation that went from steam gauge flying to flat screen instrumentations, where the new up and coming people only know how to interpret the flat screen. And when something goes wrong, they're totally lost and they're trying to reset computers and their head is down and it's a problem.
Yeah, they don't have the nuts and bolts, pick and shovel aspect of the training, which I think is still very important.
Right. So I was born during that transition, so I happen to know both sides, luckily.
Absolutely. You know, during the Second World War, when Germany was running out of personnel, they began training, started training for radar somewhere in the middle.
Right.
Because they didn't have the time to give the complete background of what the idiosyncrasies might be and how the machine actually worked and how the signals came back and what could happen to distort them. So they were training these people, half training them.
Right.
And it had an impact on the ability of aircraft to get through
sure.
in the latter part of the war.
Sure.
So this half training, you probably have to, one estimate by my brother, who, as you know, has more than 70 years of experience, he'll be 90, by the way, at the end of the week, is that the training course should be double in length, and that's why many of these young people flop out.
Right.
They're not having enough time to assimilate some very complicated stuff.
Absolutely.
Everything that you and I knew, plus everything that's happened since.
Right, and it's always changing every month.
As an example, when I first started flying, there weren't any transponders in commercial or light aircraft. We didn't know anything about
it. So now there's something above and beyond a transponder, the ABS in, ABS out, which is a whole other system.
All of it. And there wasn't any GPS.
Right.
The CIA may have had something
right.
because they had a few satellites up, but we did not.
This is another language to me, ladies and gentlemen. What is ABS? What are some of those technical terms you're mentioning?
Well, ABS in and ABS out is an FAA requirement from a certain year recently. I forgot what it was. But it basically tells air traffic controller your airspeed, a lot more information than they would normally get from a transponder readback.
Right, hold
so
that.
All
like,
of this
hold that 1 second. The transponder... When people might be familiar with a radar screen where the sweep comes around, well, before the sweep used to come around, and in the New York Center, you would see 500 dots. Now, which one am I talking to?
Right.
So when now it came around, and that particular dot, if he what we call squawk ident,
right.
let's say 7700, when it came around and you squawk ident on that, that particular dot would show what Mike just said, his airspeed, his altitude, and his heading.
Right.
And so this was a tremendous boon, where before I used to say right turn 15 degrees, so on. And so I would guess that the one making the turn from the last sweep was the right airplane. But how many times people spoke to the wrong airplane and vice versa, we don't
know. ABS in and ABS out gives that constant information. I don't have to hit the squawk button anymore.
Right. Well, you know, that's good to know. That's the reason why I asked. And thank you, Anthony, for... chiming in, because I think it's important that people understand that the government does have a role in this in terms of the FAA, and it's a good role in terms of safety and the provision of information that's necessary not only for the pilots but for the air traffic controllers and ultimately for the public safety, so that a flight can be deemed safe and information is accurate as to whereabouts of a plane and how it's being run and so on and so forth. So this is a great, great interview. Go on, gentlemen?
Well, you know, Mike has so many different facets to his abilities. We could talk about flying all day, but he also is a filmmaker, which I find very, very exciting. And he's made a film, was the producer of the film, and, you know, put all the pieces together. Tell us a little bit about your movie, Mike.
Well, that sort of like just fell in my lap. I run a third generation construction company very close to where we are right now. And I was renting out some space and parking space, yard space, and office space. And one of the persons I was renting to, I found out after he got to know me and became friends with me, confided in me to let me know that he was the oldest son of the Lutz family that lived in the Amityville Horror during the hauntings, and that he wanted to come out with a movie, and he wanted me to help produce it.
For those of you that don't know, when Michael Russo here, our guest, referred to the Amityville Horror, it had to do with a house in Amityville, Long Island, in the state of New York, which was ultimately made into a movie because the house was considered to be haunted. And Michael is speaking about his encounter with the eldest son of the family that lived in that haunted house.
That's correct.
And he knew so much about that, so that enabled you. So how did your film treat that?
Okay, so when Danny came and asked me to help him, I instantly had him sign a piece of paper that made me his manager, and I started to do some investigation on the computer, and I found that there was a massive amount of information about Amityville horrors and hauntings, and I got in contact with one of the guys who was running one of the biggest websites. And I found out that that was his recreation, but his occupation was a filmmaker.
Uh-huh.
So I told him that I had Danny in my yard, and he said, "I don't believe you." And I said,
wow.
"I'll send you a picture." And I sent him a picture, and next thing I knew, he was flying to New York to do an interview with him, and that started the ball rolling to make the movie.
And who created the script?
Eric Walter is the director and the writer of the movie.
And let our audience know, where can they see this?
This is I believe it can be seen on YouTube right now. If you look at it, it's My Amityville Horror, and there is a My Amityville Horror Facebook page, I believe, also.
I believe it's on Tubi, YouTube, AMC Plus, and Amazon.
There you go. That's right, Bill.
My Amityville Horror, and we're speaking with Michael Russo, the producer of My Amityville Horror.
And so this film, how much time did you put into this now? I mean, it had to cost money.
Yes.
You had to find a production company.
Right.
And you had to find actors.
Right. So we found the production company. That was Eric Walter, and he was very excited to do it. He was a young man at the time. The executive producers of the movie was myself and my other cousin, Ronnie.
That's Ron Paleo.
Ron Paleo. And so we financed the movie, and basically Eric did everything in-house, including all of the editing for the movie.
So you had an in-house operation.
Right.
And kind of a close-knit operation as well. And how long is the film? Is it feature-length?
Yes, it's feature-length.
It's more than an hour. An hour and 20, something like that.
Something like that.
You know, I hate to shift from so quickly to another subject, but as you know, we're on the radio and we're short on time.
Sure.
And I know that you ran a major construction operation right here in Whitestone, out of Whitestone, for many years. And we're going to have you back. I mean, I haven't even consulted with Bill. We're going to have you back.
Okay.
And we're going to talk again about flying.
Right.
We're going to talk about the shortage of pilots and air traffic controllers, and talk about your movie some more. But let's talk about your construction business a little bit.
Okay, yeah, well, that's pretty unique. It started with my grandfather in 1925, and we specialize in sanitary construction in the food processing industry. Our main customers in the day was every single milk company on Long Island in the tri-state area. In meat was Boar's Head and the Hunts Point Meat Market. However, over the years, all the milk bottling companies have closed. So
that's New York City.
We had to reinvent ourselves, and now I'm working a lot in the healthcare industry. I'm doing a lot of work for nursing homes and repointing the exterior bricks and anything that needs to be done interior-wise.
Now, let me ask you, you said that you are performing what they call healthy construction. Was that the word you used?
No, healthcare.
Healthcare construction, but also that you was constructing in a way for the food industry that it
right.
didn't...
Right, So the original catch line that I told you before is it's a third generation industrial commercial food processing construction, walk-in coolers and freezers, a specialty.
Okay, now I understand. So that company, you're still operating?
Yes, I do. Yes, that my grandfather started and I'm still running.
And so I understand that one of your customers for a long time was Weston Beef.
Oh, that's correct. I've done a lot of work for a lot of meat company, fish companies, produce, anything that needs a clean room or is inspected by USDA.
That's the term I was looking for. You used
clean
it earlier,
room.
The clean room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What does that entail? Does it have to meet certain standards?
Oh, absolutely. Clean room has to have materials on the wall, the ceiling, and the floors that do not absorb bacteria. And where the floor and the wall meets, it can't be a 90 degree. It has to have a cove so it's washable with a hose. So there's no germs to make
yes,
it a clean room.
You know, I one of my sons is in the land of Cameroon right now, and he's working in a deal to create clinics.
Mm.
And he was talking to me about the same standards in the clinics and the difficulties they're having because, you know, you want to put a clinic.
Right.
You need electricity, water,
right.
sewer. So right now they're working on getting a road to where they want the clinic.
Yeah.
So, but back to the standard, that's a very interesting topic.
Well, our drains are stainless steel with, you know, the catch basins and sediment baskets.
That's called the clean room.
Right.
Kind of clean room construction.
Right. So it's usually USDA approved. They'll have a federal agent come and do an inspection of the room and make sure it adheres to everything that I just told you.
Yeah. And then the hospital, they have Jayco.
Right. So that's why it was an easy transition for me to go into the healthcare because it's similar.
You know, like every show with every great guest that we have, and you've certainly been a wonderful guest, you know, we're running short on time. And I know Bill wants to cover up a few things
yes.
before we sign off.
Thanks, Anthony, for taking the lead on this interview of Michael Russo, our guest, pilot, filmmaker, construction company owner. He also happens to be the owner of a vintage Jeep.
Yes.
He is a collector of many items,
right.
And we're going to have Michael Russo, my cousin, who is actually the son of my first cousin, so I guess that's cousin first removed or second removed? Or
second cousin.
Second cousin.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we're not removed. We're together right now on the radio program.
Yeah, right here.
So I'm very, very proud to have Michael Russo on the show. And at a later show, we will be interacting with Michael and other guests. And what we do here on the Bill Russo Show, if you want to be on a guest on the Bill Russo Show, you can email me at fabintro@gmail.com, fabintro@gmail.com. We connect people together. We find out a little bit about the person. In this case, Michael Russo, we find out their connections, and we usually come up with someone who's connected to them, and we like to have two people who haven't seen each other or who are connected on the same program at the same time, and we will do that at a future program with Michael Russo. Thank you, Michael, for being on the show. Thank you, Anthony, for taking the lead on the Fab Intro Show, and we want to thank our sound engineer, Ed Paunetto, who is silent right now because he's working on the sound, of course. And we thank you for listening to the Fab Intro Show.
You're listening to the Fab Intro Show. Visit us on our website, www.fabintro.com. Thank you.